Welcome back to Football Americana. This week, I'm talking to Christian Fuchs, who is another person who probably doesn't need my introduction. But for those of you who haven't followed the game of soccer too closely, he's an Austrian international, Premier League champion with Leicester City, a businessman, and a current member of Charlotte FC, which we're going to talk about all of those things. But to start off, Christian, really appreciate you coming on the show. Just wanted to hear a little bit from you about your youth football upbringing and kind of what set the stage for this becoming your life.
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. Really appreciate that. What can I say? It started very early for me. If I can believe my parents, which I usually do, they told me that my first word was ball. So it kind of set the trend then already, and that with the age of 8 months, I started to kick the ball around. And they knew I'm going to make it big.
I was going to say, like, from the beginning, did you have some special talent, or like, did it take you a while to realize that?
No, I wouldn't say special talent. I think my special talent overall was consistency and persistent in trying to just become the best me that I could be. And I never had the pressure, never put the pressure on myself. Of course, I had a dream, right? Everybody's dream in Austria is to make it into the Bundesliga at some point, in the Austrian Bundesliga. But I never went to an academy setup. I was even told I'm not good enough when I was 11. So I stayed very local. I was fortunate enough that I had two people besides my parents that supported me along the way very much so, one of which I'm still in contact with, and he's running my academy in Austria. And having those people helped me a lot in my development, because I did a lot extra besides of team training, which I think was the foundation. I was not the best player on my team, but like I told you, I had the willingness to go the extra mile, to do more every day, and eventually it worked out.
Yeah. Why do you think, so at 11, you know, you were told you weren't good enough. What allowed you to think, no, if I do this extra and I stick with it, like, I should still be doing this?
Like I told you, I had people that helped me, that supported me. But then, you know, a message like this is never nice, especially not even in teenage ages. You know, I was even younger than that. But then it's about how you deal with that, right? And for me, back then, I mean, football was my life back then already. There's number one sport. I know Austria is very famous for skiing and ski jumping, but it's still the number one sport. It's played year round. And I was, my mindset was, okay, I'll show you. I'll show you that you're wrong. And eventually I proved him right, just a couple of years later.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get into those couple of years later. I think it's so interesting to hear you say that, because something I always talk to youth players about and stuff is that it's not, you know, the people who you watch on TV are not just the ones who everything came easy to them. Like, they experience the same things that the young players do now. You know, you're told you're not good enough, your confidence is down, whatever it happens. And it is the reality. So it's really, it's interesting to hear you talk about that and what kept your belief going. Cause
it's glamorous when you see the Messi, Ronaldo's, whoever play, right? But the majority of players are hardworking players, and those two guys as well. And there are thousands of hours extra that you have to put in place, that you have to work over years to become eventually where you want to be. It's, you know, as well as I do, it's not only the hard work. There's a lot of luck that comes with it as well. You have to be at the right place at the right time. You have to be surrounded by the right people again. Maybe open a door or another, or drop a hint to somebody, hey, have a look at that player. But at the end, it's in your hands. And what do you want to do with it? If you have a little bit of talent and you are willing to work hard, then the chances raise immediately.
Yeah, no, I think it's such a good and important message, especially now with what it looks like on social media. You get a very false sense of what it takes or it might not take to get there. But from your first experience as a pro, when you went to Germany until now, talk a little bit about your development, because I think sometimes people too think, okay, well, once you're a professional, you know, you've made it. But the reality is many professionals, that's when the journey begins. And I want to hear a little bit from you about how you learn and grew from the time you became a professional player until who you are now and how your perspective has changed.
Well, my first club was in in Austria. I was there for 5 years. It was from Mattersburg, which doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately. But it was, I compare the times from back then to what's the case right now, especially with young players, it was much, much more tough. Much more tough. I mean, I had well-established players that were my age, where I'm right now, and they would give you a lot of, you need to sense this right now, a lot of shit. But that's what it was.
Thank you for censoring.
It was very rough. And, you know, it was, hey, why do we need this player? If you make wrong decisions, why do we need him? Why is he playing here? I was fortunate that my first coach, when I was 17, I turned pro. He was very supportive. He said, listen, if you're better than an older player, I play you because you're the future of the club. So that was great for me. And at the end, all those guys that were, one particular guy that was very hard on me, very rough on me, his name was Didi Cuba. He played in Spain. He played in Germany for Wolfsburg. I think it was Real Sociedad where he played in Spain. And he was my captain then. He was not, I always thought, okay, he's not a nice guy at all. But then on my last day, when I made the move to Germany, he was like, listen, I always know you're going to make it. So he kind of, everything made sense that he kind of prepared me for the bigger world out there, which starts in Germany, where I was for 7 years, 8 years, pretty long time. And he was right. It's getting more tough, more and more tough. And when you become professional, it's still a long way to go until you are a real professional established player. I mean, you have a chance, but there were 2 years where I had to fight for my position to even be in that roster. And my mentality helped me a lot.
Yeah. I'm curious if you think that it's have things changed with the newer generation, or is it a cultural thing, you think? Because I think of a lot of youth players growing up in the U.S., at least, I think, don't have that experience that you're talking about, where it's really tough and cutthroat. Is that what we're missing in the U.S., or is that just changed nowadays?
Well, I think it changed overall, not only in the U.S., it changed overall. Kind of wear a white glove, and you have to be careful of what you're saying. But as a matter of fact, it helped me so much to go through this tough experience, this rough school, kind of, to become who I am now, and to be resilient if things don't work your way. Because the thing that I believe is, if you don't have certain experiences where you have to fight for your position, where you have to really go head to head with somebody, when there comes a tough time, when you fight, okay, not in this country, but when you fight for relegation, let's say, in Europe, fight against relegation, I have to say, the pressure from outside, from media, from fans, can grow enormously. And being able to deal with that and not making too much of it, but also be aware that you have to put yourself under pressure to deliver is something that helped me going through this tough education.
Yeah, a lot of what you're saying really resonates with me in a different way about my upbringing in the game and the experiences I was in, and how nervous I was, and how I felt like it was a lot of pressure. And now my view of the new generation is it's a little bit less of that. But so I was curious to hear from you if it's changed everywhere, or if it's just maybe an American thing. But it sounds like
No, not at all. I mean, you know, I'm probably one of the last players from that older generation. Giving away my age here right now.
we can Google your age. Don't worry.
But I'm proud of it. But you know, I'm not changing who I am, and I will not change on the field. If I think somebody is screwing up, I will tell them. But on the other side, I think it's also important, and that's what something that I've learned over time as well. It's equally important to emphasize if somebody does something well, to give them more confidence.
Yeah. And so fast forwarding a little in your career to, the Leicester City experience and winning the Premier League, there's always, I've seen and read so many takes on what made that team so special. And I think you read from everything from the physical preparation to the mentality. There's so many. I'm curious to hear from you, having been part of it. Like what would you pinpoint as the thing that was so special about that group?
What made us special was that we did not have any pressure. I mean, the year before I joined, they barely escaped relegation, right? With the great escape they had where in the last 8 games, they won 7 against Manchester United as well. And nobody put any pressure on you on a team that just stayed up in the Premier League, which was great for us. Even if throughout the season, as the season prolonged, it was, everybody just said, yeah, it will fold at some point. And, you know, it takes the pressure away from you again because nobody's expecting anything from you anyway. But internally, you know, it was kind of the same thing because all we did is, okay, we want to go out. We had the confidence. We want to go out and win every game with how we play. And we knew we can hurt any team that, we come across. And but we never once said, okay, we're going to win this. The mentality was never there. It was, okay, let's get to the 40 points so we stay in the league. When we reach that, okay, what can we achieve next? Let's try to be top 10. Okay, we reached that. What's next? And so on and so on. And eventually, 2-3 games or 4 games for the end of the season, Claudio Ranieri gave a press conference where he said, okay, now we go for it. But even for me as a player, when we were in Jamie Vardy's house celebrating, watching Chelsea against Tottenham game, that ended 2-2, which confirmed that we are Premier League champions. The only time I really, really believe that we're going to become champions is when the final whistle. It was never, you know, it's not our ambition. The Tottenhams, Arsenals, Manchester United, Chelsea's, Man City's, these are the teams that should win it. Not freaking Leicester City, the little galleons there that fight season everybody. No, it's just Leicester City. And even more proud I am of that because we made it happen.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes the story so special, even from the outside, for everybody to feel what you just said. Is like, that's not supposed to happen, but that's, I think, what makes football so exciting for everyone, is that that can happen. So yeah, talk about that moment when that final whistle blew at Jamie Vardy's house. Like, describe the scene there.
Well, just go to my Twitter account.
fair, yes.
No, I, in anticipation of the final whistle, I was preparing my phone, and when you see the video, it was... Yeah. It was madness. I mean, we were just screaming for joy, relief as well, because you still have, you know, you want it, right? When you're in this position, you want it to happen. And the relief, and it was amazing. It was just pure joy and happiness paired with crazy guys.
Yeah, I can imagine. So fast forwarding a little, obviously now you're at Charlotte FC, and you know, I've seen you and heard you talk a little bit about Steve Walsh and his role in bringing you here. I'm curious to hear a little bit about, what were some of your questions or concerns when he said, hey, you should come to Charlotte FC? Like, what were you thinking at first? What was the first question that went through your mind in that conversation?
Honestly, I had no questions, because Steve Walsh made me a Premier League champion. He signed me to Leicester. He scouted me and signed me to Leicester. And what else do I have to ask? There's no questions asked. If he says this is something that can really be good for your career, to extend your career, and where you can play a big part in your franchise, I'm like, it sounds very good to me. That's it.
Yeah, that's simple.
That's simple. Yeah. It doesn't always have to be complicated.
Yeah. No, and that's a good point.
I love speaking
a lot to your trust of him.
Yeah, of course, I do. I do, and he's around frequently. And it's good to see those old faces.
Yeah. So, you know, talk a little bit about the experience so far, and how has not just the experience in Charlotte, but MLS, like, how does this compare to other experiences in your career?
I got to be honest, initially I didn't know what to make of it, because I know the MLS is broadcasted overseas in England, but usually by the time the game starts, it's 1 a.m. So you cannot really follow too much of it. And by the time you know the results and the show a replay of the game, I'm really not bothered watching the games anymore because I know already what's happening. So I did not have, I had some knowledge, right? I followed the growth of the MLS over the years before I came, and it's constantly getting better. But then when I came here, I was really impressed overall with the talent. That it is, okay, it's not on a level from Europe right now. And I think it's also not fair to compare those leagues because one league is 150, 175 years old. The MLS is 26 years old. So I think that's not fair to compare. But what the MLS has is it's very competitive, that literally anybody can beat anybody, which I think makes it very attractive for the viewers or for the people that come to the stadium, and also how passionate fans are about the game, which I think is very crucial to have. That it's not only a game, okay, that it's the fourth biggest game in the US or whatever it is. No, there's a good crowd there, there are passionate fans there, which I think is very important.
Yeah, how would you describe, in what way do you think the level of the game and the talent on the field is a little bit different than what you've experienced in Europe? Like, what are some of the, is there an immediate thing you notice and you say, oh, wow, this does or doesn't happen differently than Europe?
I think the main thing is, and it's not about talent. It has nothing to do with talent, because you see how Pulisic is playing at big clubs in Europe. So it's not the talent. I think the main difference is the intensity and willingness. Because if you can produce a team that is willing to run, willing to put a lot of intensity onto the field, trying to press hard, and not giving the opponent time to build the game and play this relaxed style, which I see many times, I think you can have really a big impact onto the league. So that for me, when I compare the intensity of trainings and the intensity in games, with the Premier League or Champions League or whatever it is, I think there's the biggest difference. Players are talented. I put my hands down for that. They're really good players in this league, and a lot of them will make their way and become great players. But I think that's the main difference.
Yeah, that's really interesting. What do you think brings that intensity? Is it the money on the line? Is it just time? Is it the promotion relegation factor? Like, what gets it there?
Well, I think it starts with personal ambition of players. Have I ever been exposed to a bigger, higher level? Because you can see that some of those players that are coming over from Europe, they are demanding a lot more than. But then some players are coming over to, okay, this is my final year, and I'm gonna lowball a little bit. So that's not me. I mean, when I commit to something or when I join a club, then I want to be successful. I mean, winning the Premier League, winning the FA Cup, just that smell of success is simply too good to resist. And having opportunities with, I think with Charlotte, we have opportunities. Is it this year? I don't know. Is it next year? I would imagine that after the first year and putting things in place, that the second year, the team can pick up a lot and can be really a competitive team in the league. I'm just thinking of, like, being exposed, and that starts with the coaching staff. Right? If the coaching staff demands a lot from the players and gets them on board right away with a good philosophy, with intensity, again, I think then the players will capture that and it will become their second nature. But it has to start with because the players are willing, right? The players are willing to learn. And if you are exposed to a coach that has that experience from overseas, they will pick up on that and they will make it their own nature.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you talk about how that shift needs to take place, because it's something, you know, I think about now as a general manager of a club is how do we get that winning mentality at our club, or what is that shift in either the mindset or the physical preparation or whatever it is that takes it to the next level. So it's very interesting to hear you talk about that and how it can.
But it's about the smaller thing for me. I'll give you an example, okay? When you do a passing drill or whatever it is, right? If I don't make a proper 5-yard pass, I'm getting upset with myself. It has to be like sharp into the feet, into the right foot of the player to give him the direction, to send the ball with a message. This 5-yard pass is equally important to me than when I do a 40-yard pass. Everything needs to be like, that has to be the mentality of a player. Okay, whatever I do it properly with my best abilities. That's starting there. Everything else will follow. If you do this, the simple things properly, then the rest will follow.
Yeah. I know I'm listening to you talk, and in so many ways, I see like how valuable this is for your teammates to hear. And then I think about, you know, just learning about all the things you're doing outside of the game too, on the business side, and all of your passions. I think you just, I'm sure you know this, you have so much to give to the sport. So I'm curious to hear you talk a little bit about where you see, you know, on the business side and everything you're involved in, where you see that transitioning and what it, you know, do you have a vision for post-playing, like what your main thing is, or do you like to just have your hands in a lot of different things? Like who are you when you're done as a player?
Well, I'm definitely not a person that just sits around on his behind.
I gathered that.
He's lazy at home, even though I'm home now, but I just need time for you. There are a lot of things in place right now. I have my sports facility in upstate New York, in Warwick, which is a great project, big project. But I'm fortunate that I have an amazing wife that can run that. What I'm very interested in overall is player development, youth player development, which is one of my heart pieces because of what I told you at the very beginning. There's so many players out there that might never get a shot. You know, I have my academy for quite some time, and in England especially is right now where it's really becoming a strong academy. And we have signed now several players, but to professional deals. But now we signed one in England to a club called Derby County, which is one of the highest. Don't get me wrong, they are in League One now, they're relegated, but the academy itself is on the highest level in England. So we have given this opportunity, or we have made this opportunity finally available to our players to really get into the professional system.
That is, yeah, I think it's so powerful to hear you talk about who you were as a kid and what you have achieved in the game, and then to provide that opportunity or the potential for that opportunity to someone else is close to your heart, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So providing these opportunities, but then I'm doing my UEFA license right now. I'm in the process because I want to get coaching professional teams. Yeah. That's my goal. It's my passion. It's my life. And I see that with the teams that I played here, with Shard FC where I'm playing right now, I can give a lot to professional players as well with the experience that I have, and that's another goal of mine.
Yeah, would you want to stay in the US and coach? Is that the goal, or just open it up for whichever club?
Well, to start with, most likely, yes. To get my feet wet first, maybe it's going to be academy coaching or assistant or whatever it is. But then I'm definitely eyeing with becoming a regular head coach or a manager.
Yeah. I can hear it. I can imagine it. I hear the halftime motivation.
you don't want to be in a halftime in the locker room.
We would need a lot of beeps on this podcast to hear the halftime talk, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. We need them already. We're not even losing a game right now.
Yeah, this is just a nice, easy conversation. We have a couple beeps that we got to do. So a couple more questions just about things going on in the world game right now. But then we will finish up with, we have what we call our false nine, which is just nine quick fun questions for you just to hear what comes to the top of your head. But before we do that, that fun part, have you been watching the Women's Euros at all?
I have followed it a little bit. I've not actively watched it, but I've followed it a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, curious your thoughts on, you know, obviously in the US, the women's game is incredibly big. There's unfortunately no team in Charlotte, but there's an NWSL team in North Carolina. Have you, throughout your time, like how much does the women's game come into your consciousness as a player? Or is it something that you've followed or not really? Or kind of how do you think about the women's game?
Well, I have a women's team myself. So yeah, it's in England and in the US, because it's, especially in the US, it's probably, I wouldn't say bigger, but I think the attention for women's football is incredible over here. And there are so many good players, honestly. It's very fascinating how some of the women's teams can really play amazing football. I mean, I'll give you a little story, but that's now, oh my God, I'll give my age away again. That's now 15 years ago. there was one moment I played for Bochum in Germany. And I did not know what to make out of women's football, because you only see it on TV, and, you know, because there's not tons and tons of fans, especially back then at the stadiums. And we saw it with COVID as well. It's kind of, the atmosphere is missing. It's kind of getting boring, right? But then I watched the German national, the women's national team playing, I think it was Italy or Croatia or something like that. And I was astonished with how good they are playing, with how good that game was. And the same intensity was there, the speed was there, and it was really, really exciting to watch. So ever since, I have a big interest in women's football, and knowing that they're really, really, they can live well, really well.
Yeah, and what you're saying is really important, I think, is a lot of times, you know, with the camera angles and the way the stadium looks, if there's not people in it, you're right, in the men's game now, everyone felt for the first time what it could look like or feel like when it's silent or there's no fan. It really does impact, it impacts the viewing experience and the impression of what's going on the field a lot, I think. So, yeah, I'm curious what year that was, but I'm glad to hear that story.
That was in, I can give you that date. I can give you that year.
Yeah.
So that was 2009.
Yeah.
Quite some time ago.
Yeah, no, it's a great story though. So yeah, last, before we get into our kind of final questions, curious, any thoughts or predictions surrounding the World Cup? Do you have a predicted winner or a team you think is going to impress or surprise people, or any tidbits that we can go back and say, hey, he predicted that right?
Well, I gotta say the US.
Did you have to say that because it's on
the podcast? I don't know. Do I have to? I'm in peer pressure here right now. I'm in America. it's a tough one. It's a tough one because so many, not only the bigger teams are getting better every year and it's getting more and more competitive, but those are the so-called smaller countries starting to be competitive. I just saw a stat the other day from the last Euros. And it was surprisingly, I love to see that because it was surprising for me because I'm Austrian. And Austria played a pretty good role, but they are also one of the smaller nations overall. But they were with the stats, like building the game and bringing the game forward into the attacking third with passing, were, I think, the top four teams. So based on that, and England, with passing and bringing the ball forward, was one of the weakest teams. But we all know how England performed well. And so that's why it's hard to pick a favorite. It's really hard to pick a favorite. I think you always have to name the traditional favorites that are always there. But I would like to see, you know, I like underdog stories. I really do like them. So it really doesn't matter who it is, but if somebody can make something happen again that fascinates people and that makes people even more excited watching the World Cup, that would be great.
Yeah, I agree. Those stories are always great to get behind. The team that you don't know you're behind until the games start, and then you realize everyone's wanting them to win. Okay. Our false nine. So these are just nine kind of quick questions. Whatever comes to mind first. Some of them are kind of fun and funny. First, what all-time match would you want to attend as a spectator? Any match that's happened ever through history?
Oh. Honestly, I don't have a particular one, but I would like to see some of the games from it was honestly that's in the 40s, 50s. I would like to experience one of those games. And it was a completely different game. I would really like to really see how the game changed. That would fascinate me. It's not a particular game. It can be maybe an Austrian game with Panenka and all those guys. But seeing one of those games, travel back in time, and experience the difference that would fascinate me.
Yeah, the evolution has been phenomenal. So I can imagine that would be quite an interesting experience. You have to pick somebody to take a penalty to save your life. Who takes it?
Oh, save my life. So I cannot take it myself?
You can, if you would trust yourself with your own life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have to.
Yeah.
I'm in charge of my own life. I have to.
Okay, you're up. No pressure. The first match you remember watching?
It was a game between... It was in the stadium of Vienna, the Happel Stadium, and it was the Champions League final between Ajax and Amsterdam. Was it Milan? AC Milan? I don't know, but it was Patrick Kluivert, when he was in his first years, when he scored the winning goal.
Not a bad match to watch.
that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I think that's 30 years ago now, or 25 years or something.
Well, in tandem with that, I'm curious, who'd you have a poster of in your room growing up? Like, who was your idol?
Eric Cantona.
Love it.
Not because of his kung fu kick. Just because of his aura, of his presence. He always had to call him up. I mean, everybody
yep.
liked him. But just because he was a real leader, I loved him.
Yeah. Your favorite stadium you've played in?
I have a couple of years in my head.
Yeah, you've played in several stadiums. So
Yeah, honestly, there are a couple of them, but the best game that I played myself was the Community Shield final against Manchester United in Wembley, where it was 100,000 people. That was impressive. We walk out, and we had it was on the left side where we warmed up. Everything was blue, and literally you could draw a line on the far side of the stands, and everything was red on the other side. And that was incredible.
Yeah, that atmosphere. I can understand why that was your best. All-time teammate with the best dance moves. You can say yourself, but then we would need a demo.
I'm not saying I'm a bad dancer. All time, do I throw this to now?
Or you can say just some of the best dancers in the locker rooms you've been in, if it's a list.
No, it's not a list. No. You're talking about the worst dancer, right?
Oh, well, we could have that one. I said the best, but I am curious the worst.
The best.
We'll also hear the worst. I'll gladly hear that one, too.
The best dancer was Kelechi Iheanacho. And the worst was Kelechi Iheanacho. I mean,
now
was,
I really want to see
that. I could say the same with Wilson and Didi because they were always dancing together. And they thought they were dancing really well. But they were the only ones dancing. But at the same time, I mean, they have good moves, honestly. They really move to the African music, which they always play. They really move well. And it's a good beat, good rhythm. But honestly, I thought they're really making fun of themselves.
I can only imagine. I'm like picturing what was going on. I can only imagine. So last couple, your favorite pair of sneakers.
I have a completely white pair of sneakers, zero branding on it. Very simple. Talking about simplicity again, right? That I just will never throw away. They are unbelievable. They are just slide in. Even they have laces, but you slide in, you slide out. All the issues.
Great. Your go-to snack?
My go-to snack? I have no go-to snack.
You know, okay, what are you drinking in your mug then?
Oh, that's coffee. But that's coffee, not a snack. Okay. That's not a snack.
Yeah, no, I know. I was just curious.
I like coffee. My go-to snack. I've never had this question. I have no.
I didn't think this was going to be, of all the questions and the in-depth analysis you gave, this is the one that is hard for you.
But because I was never asked that question, don't have my three answers to find out that I just can pick and choose from. I would say Takis, hot Takis.
Okay.
Blue Takis. It has to be blue Takis though.
Okay. And next time, now you have this prepared for next time you get asked that.
I need to say something else next. But this is number one.
Okay, great. Last question. If you ever play pickup football, what's your pet peeve? Like, what could people do when you play for fun that just you just hate?
Just pickup football? Well, you know, it should be, like I said, it should be fun, right? So if you have one of those players that are super over-motivated and don't see it as fun, but see it as a challenge and try to show up. Don't show up. Next thing you know, you get macked. So just keep it simple, have fun, and enjoy the moment.
Yeah, I can imagine a player playing against you in a casual game. It's their chance to play Christian Fuchs, so maybe they take it too seriously.
Wow.
Well, thank you so much. I really, in listening to you talk, I can imagine you as a coach. I can imagine you leading the way for the next generation of youth. And I think they'll be very lucky. Whoever you coach will be very lucky to hear from you. So appreciate your time and your insight and wishing you the best of luck.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much, Ben.